I play guitar really, really well if you don't know how to play guitar.
You're listening to the Jack Wagon Podcast.
Oh, good for you!
Featuring Chad Roper and Drew Cobb from Cool 94's Rope and Drew in the Morning.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. You know, morons.
Oh. Podcast is unsuitable for small children and girly soy boys.
They whine about anything. You pull down their pants and you spank their ass.
What is these animals?
Them ones that eat snakes, huh?
Let's get it all!
Welcome to the Jack Wagon Podcast.
Okay, here we are. Jack Wagon Podcast. Number 6, I'm Chad Roper, that's Drew Cobb, and joining us in studio, Brian Henderson.
How's it going, fellas?
Man, I'm doing great, and I'm honored to have you with me. And man, it has been, I want to say, it's been more than a year, near 2 years, that we've actually been in the same room together.
It's been a long time. I think the last time we really probably talked was at a retirement dinner. Is that really the last time we visited?
I don't know, but if that was the last time that we visited, it was probably a forgetful evening. Like, so, we've shown up because someone's hella old and we're just chewing fat because we're arm candy to our wives, and that's about it.
Just to be clear, it's neither of us that are hella old. We're both in our prime. You're looking good, man. It's been a long time.
It's because I get on to him every single day. I make fun of him. I always say that he's 62 years old, even though he's only, what is it, 47?
48 now.
Yeah.
That's round in the bend.
Can you turn that mic a little more pointed at your mouth?
I absolutely can. I can point all kinds of things toward my mouth, Chad.
Attaboy. That's why I love that guy.
Yeah, it is.
Brian, the reason why I ask you here is because most recently you had this podcast thing that you did called The Breakers, and it was damned impressive. We're going to get to that coming up, but I thought back whenever I was able to lock you down about how enjoyable a night it was, the night that we all met. And I'm thinking this was probably in 04 or 05, because I hadn't been married very long when I met you. And at that time, you were practicing law, self-employed in Western Oklahoma. What hotel were we at?
Wow. That's taking us back a little bit. I can't remember what hotel it was. You were playing in the 80s cover band at the time.
Whoa.
Tall pink hair, right?
Yes.
You did have the tall pink, the Marge Simpson hair, right?
That's right. Drew doesn't know about this.
I've never heard about this.
Okay,
Brian.
Now you got to go back. We've got some photographs
about the 80s chat.
Man, at least once a week, I had to don the most f***ing ridiculous outfit that included a Marge Simpson wig that I found in the back of a bar that had been changed into just this big giant dance and drinking hole where it used to serve food and all this other stuff. And I guess, and I don't know how far back it went, they did serve food and then they closed it for a while. They opened it back up as the Sky Bar. And we had all gotten really shit-faced before the gig one night because that's kind of what it had devolved into. We were only having fun at that particular gig if we were getting plowed. And so we happened to start rummaging through their kitchen. Like, what can we find? And in all that, I found that damn wig and I was like, mine. And Drew, that's where that came from.
I know you have a picture in your head of what this would have looked. It's worse.
I'm imagining the worst thing possible. Believe me, that's what I always do with Chad. You always have to assume, you know, the extreme of whatever end he's talking about.
Yeah. But I don't remember what hotel it was. It would have been at some continuing education that we were doing. So there were a number of lawyers, and we all decided to go out that night because your wife's husband was playing in a band that night. So we all went out to see the show.
Listen, it was like, it was a bar convention deal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was a bar convention thing. I met basically all of the big players in the law industry that was out this way. I mean, a lot of the cool kids were there. And I can remember meeting you. And we had the coolest conversation all night in between, I don't know, the 20 or 30 beers. And I want to say that that was
20 or 30 beers. Wow.
And I want to say
we were younger then.
That was the night also that wasn't like some of the OJ legal team keynote speakers at that particular one.
Man, that could be. You're talking. We're going way back here.
Yeah.
In fact, you were still living in Oklahoma City at the time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This was before you guys even came back this way.
Yeah. We were loosely talking about this shit. And so Ben Stein was one of the people there.
That's right.
Do you remember when we were all trying to remember? Because I had to split early, go play the gig, and then I was going to come back. And it was when we ran into Ben Stein, and I was like,
"Is he as big of an asshole as he appears to be?"
He wasn't then.
He was totally cool. Maybe he was a little shitty, headed up to bed, but I caught him going into the elevator. I said, "Give me some rocker fingers. I'll have to show you this picture, man."
It's like great.
Were you with us?
I didn't see the rocker fingers. I did get to meet him at least that afternoon. Great. We got a book signed and he did a talk
that
day.
It was that night.
He's the king of passive aggression, man, for sure.
Oh, he's one of the smartest guys ever. I mean, you could tell he was kind of that guy when you talk to him about how he really got his jump start and how he accidentally fell into the Nixon administration, as a matter of fact.
He was a speechwriter, isn't it?
Yeah, he was a press guy. But anyway, just a brilliant fellow. And the best that I got from him that night was a pick. And he's throwing rocker fingers. He's got a suit on and some old guy tennis shoes. It was awesome.
I can dig that, man.
But anyway, what I really wanted to get to was how fascinated I was by your admission that the only reason why you were practicing law is so that you could finance your drug habit, which was, I love playing music. That was it. You were into this band, and you've told me the name of the band a million times, and these guys were your friends, and you would sometimes run around with them. At least that was my perception of
sure.
it. Kind of like a deadhead would follow the grateful
right,
dead.
Right. We were loosely, I don't know, groupies, if you will, I guess. I don't know. And we'd gotten to be friends with this band. They were one hit wonders in the 90s, a band called The Refreshments back in the day.
The Refreshments.
So, yeah. And Roger Klein was the lead singer of that band. A couple of those guys got together with a couple of the Gin Blossoms, and they formed this band called The Peacemakers. So, and we spent a lot of time traveling around with those guys. We'd follow them back and forth. They played shows in Mexico a couple of times a year. So we'd go down to Mexico with them or fly into Phoenix with them. So, you know, yeah, that was, it did. It satisfied my hobbies and habits. One of them was hanging around with bands.
Your motivation to be an attorney was just so you could afford to go be a music head. And I related to that so much because to that point, well, I guess at that point I had recently stopped being a private investigator. But before that, my biggest achievement in life was marrying an attorney.
Absolutely.
but let's be fair, Chad. So is mine.
Yeah. I mean, see, we're still relating here.
Well, I married a Mexican chick, so I get tacos. So I win.
Andale. Now, back before that, though, you have a military career. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So talk about that.
I'd done a few things. I actually lived... I graduated high school and I moved to Japan and lived in Japan for a while. Yeah. When I came back, then I was going to do the regular college thing, went to college for a year, had a little bit too much fun. So
when you lived in Japan, were you military then or what?
No, I actually did an additional year of high school. I graduated high school here and then I went and did basically my senior year again as an exchange student.
He showed up.
You were an exchange student.
Mm-hmm. So I lived there.
That's cool.
I had a year-long visa, so I lived in northern Japan for 364 days.
Wow.
Just at the very extent of what I could before I had to come back.
Yeah.
So I came back, and I was going to do the regular college thing, but I'd learned how to have too much fun in Japan, so I kept that going when I got back and wasn't doing what I needed to do in college, so I joined the Marines. Okay. And I ended up leaving. I was on active duty in the Marines for a couple of years and then came back and finished school after being in the Marines. But I went back to Japan with the Marines. Eventually, as far as the military goes, I was also, I took a commission and I was an artillery officer in the National Guard for a time after that. So I had a military career. It wasn't a glaring career. I never really was involved in anything dramatic or traumatic, but I got to do some really interesting things.
Plus, you served, though, and so that's respectable. So definitely, you did. Yeah. What'd you do? How many years in the Marines?
I had 8 years total, and two of those were on active duty in the Marines, two of them were in the reserves in the Marines, and then four in the Guard. So
I see. Okay. So at some point, you ended up in Western Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and let's fast forward a little bit. You're a private practice attorney, and somewhere in there... you and I actually played a gig together one day.
I'm trying to remember how that came about. It was for a women's club of some, I believe we were the only guys in the place, right? It was a little weird.
It was like a couple of very lost puppies hanging out in an all cats kind of a thing. So it was a women's golf tournament.
Is that what it was? I knew it was all women.
And so I got a call and she's like, hey, you want to come do this deal? We just need to find some. I was like, I got the perfect guy, man. I called up Hendy. And I remember on the approach to this thing, it's like 3 weeks out. And I was like, yeah, all you got to do is just sing and play and I'll just play along with you, man.
You know? And what you have to understand is Chad's a professional musician.
Oh, yeah.
I can do anything, and I'm putting my fingers very close together, this good. Anything. I do anything. I'm not really that great at anything.
That's how I feel, too.
So when we go to do this, yeah, I play guitar really, really well if you don't know how to play guitar.
Nice.
This is great.
So yeah, sure.
I can remember this so vividly because like a few days, I mean, you were busy as hell all the time, either that or just distracted or basically just, I don't think you really liked to practice. I don't know what it was, but we showed up to the gig and you're like, I don't know. I wrote some songs down and I don't know. Let's just go. Let's just have fun. I mean, we're the only dudes at a big giant women's party. Let's rock. And that was fun, man. It was awesome. And Drew's over here laughing his ass off because he knows just how freaking anal I am.
Right.
I got to have it worked out. Like you can hear the sound of a vacuum cleaner coming from my asshole.
I can just picture you showing up to like do a women's 40th birthday party, or maybe it's like a bachelorette party and it's like musician/stripper. Now, usually the stripper that shows up to like these bachelorette parties or whatever, they show up as a fireman or a police officer or whatever. They're not real, but you're a real musician who has the potential to be a real stripper. That would have been something I would have paid to see, Chad.
I feel so verklempt.
You should. Definitely should.
So you teach gun classes. Mm-hmm. So you teach firearm safety. How long have you done that?
Wow.
And when did the whole law enforcement thing happen for you? Aren't you commissioned still?
I am. So I did... I mean, I had the military background where I did those types of things, and I was working with a bunch of guys who did firearms training and whatnot. So at some point along the way, I became qualified to be a firearms instructor. I had taken whatever classes and got those credentials, and my father and I started doing concealed carry classes together. It was just something that I did with my dad. So
that's cool.
That was really how teaching gun stuff came about is he and I would go teach these classes. There was a buddy of mine that was in the Marines as well. We were in law school together and he wanted to teach some of those classes, got me involved in the first ones. And then I started doing it with my dad. As far as the law enforcement stuff, that's come along fairly recently. I was in private practice doing criminal defense work, divorce work, small town lawyer stuff. You do whatever comes in the door. But the last few years I've been working in the district attorney's office as a prosecutor instead of a defense attorney. All right. Well, as a prosecutor, you spend all your time working with law enforcement, you know, the police officers and whatnot. So I started early on going out with them, you know, when they would go out and work in the night and stuff.
Now, maybe you had mentioned that stuff sometime before and mm-hmm. I had interpreted that because I thought that you had a badge some years ago. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else, but this makes perfect sense.
No, that's only the last few years that I've actually been working in law enforcement. Okay. You know, I've done the military stuff, but through doing that, working as a prosecutor and getting to know those guys, I spent a lot of time on the road with all of the agencies I work with. You know, whether they're local police officers or highway patrol or sheriff's deputies or mm-hmm. or whatnot, and. I actually work, I do have a police commission and I work as basically a reserve officer. So
okay.
I go out and work with the police, but my real day job is working as a district attorney.
So your life evolved a lot around work stuff.
Sure.
Like whether you're whether you're practicing law or pursuing these law enforcement interests or the gun stuff, whatever. But in the middle of all this, I guess the music thing or maybe the entertainer thing in you kind of grabbed you because the podcast thing happened and that surprised me. So well, how did all this even come about? And I got to say, The Breakers is a hell of a story and it's damned ironic now. But
we had some timing. We had some timing. So Chad talks about us first meeting and us doing the random music stuff. And you'll find that I do a lot of random shit. I just go 90 degrees different
That's
directions.
That's pretty much
all
your
over the
watermark.
Place.
You're like, so, oh, there's new stuff.
Right.
Oh, there's new
right.
stuff.
I am ADD on a micro and a macro level. I mean, I'll do little things for a couple of years and then I move on.
We'd be good friends.
So that's just the world that I'm in.
Women,
but
jobs.
If you'll think
world,
back.
School, it doesn't matter.
So I've done radio work. Did my work with
That's
the Thunder
right,
and stuff. So
you called games as a right. broadcaster.
Yeah, I was a really, really bad football play-by-play guy.
Okay, question real fast. Was it an accident or was it on purpose when you're calling a football game and you said down at the 52-yard line?
That's perfect.
So I just find my way into I've never been a huge football fan.
Listen, I earned the bird. Right. I've been dying to ask you for years.
So
that's a good one.
I've never been a huge football fan. My kid was playing football in middle school at the time, and one of the radio stations had gotten some small town football, and I had done a little bit of radio work. I'd actually done some radio work around here, and they knew that I could talk on the radio, and everyone just assumed that I knew something about football. So,
because you're an American and you live in America,
because I live in America,
of course
so,
you know about football.
And so someone asked if maybe I might be interested in doing play by play for my small town over here, and I said, sure, it's f-ing football. How hard could it be,
man?
So
that's easy.
So I crash course myself watching YouTube, watching people do play by play, learning formations and all this stuff. It was a train wreck early on, and
gosh,
it got a little
man.
Bit better. But so. So I started out being the voice of the Sarah Eagles for a while. And in doing that, it got me into actual, you know, doing more and more radio stuff. I learned the gear and you kind of learn that gear playing music and doing those things anyway. Mm-hmm. There's some crossover there. But I managed to parlay that into some stuff with the Thunder. I was doing some stuff.
Oh, I forgot. That's right.
Right.
You were also.
So I was doing some work here during the day we had a daily sports show here before Skinny was doing his stuff.
Yeah.
So there was a predecessor show and I would do some stuff on that. And I had found my way helping somebody out with some newspaper stuff.
That was in Bethany.
Right.
It was in Oklahoma City or something.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're interviewing Thunder basketball players.
Right. So I met the right people at the right time. I called back here and said, hey, if I can do this, maybe I can do that.
Man. I swear to God, man, I'm listening to this going, this is really Western Oklahoma's Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Chad, I mean, he's got some balls, dude, because I've been filming football. Like I commentate basketball games and I have absolutely no problem with that.
Basketball's so much harder than football.
I can do basketball.
Basketball
like
is so much harder.
It's
than
a
football.
Lot faster.
Right. It's a lot faster and it's a lot harder to describe what basketball players
sure.
are doing. You know, when you're calling football, you're going to call your clock time. You're going to call the formation and then there's going to be a snap and you have about 10 seconds worth of a play to describe. So you got a player that the ball's going to go to in a certain way, and then it's going to go down at a certain place, which takes us back to he's at the 40, he's at the 45, he's at the 50. He looks like he's going to be down
at
the 52-yard line. Wait a minute.
You know
that's
what
back
I meant.
At the 48. You guys know what I'm talking about.
That's
how that kind of thing happens on the radio.
Yeah,
don't know what the f*** you're doing and you're trying to guess at it, it's really easy for that kind of thing to happen.
As far as I'm concerned, that is the pinnacle of sportscaster success right there when you say it and mean it.
I mean, as soon as he started talking about that, man, like I've filmed easily 300-400 football games over my lifetime. I'm good at filming football.
Sure.
I would not dare step into that booth with Skinny and try to do color.
Oh, yeah.
Not even color, not anything, let alone what you did. So that's that's like jumping off a cliff.
Let me tell you, you know, as you probably, because of all of your study, know more about football than I do.
I believe I've forgotten it. I hope I've forgotten it all at this point. But so yeah, anyway, so that parlays itself into the basketball thing, and I end up doing stuff. I worked for the Associated Press and a couple of different companies doing stringer work for Thunderball games. We would do post game work, locker room.
So stuff. there was a gang of you guys that would travel to Oklahoma City multiple times a week.
So you were working with Edgar and Stout and those guys, or
Edgar and Stout were working with me.
Okay, got you, got you.
I was
make
doing
that distinction.
That.
We're gonna have to make sure they hear about this.
They know. I did it for about 2 years by myself, and it was just me driving up there and back all the
you
time.
Did bring those
and
guys.
And then I managed to get a couple of extra credentials so it didn't have to just me, because frankly, you know, those games are 2 hours away from here. Mm-hmm. You don't start anything until about 45 minutes after the game's over. And then you've got to do you've got to do all of the voice work. Then you've got to do the production work and publish it. And then you got to drive 2 hours back home and then go to work tomorrow, you know? So, I brought in the first one, which was probably Mike, and, that way we could do all that stuff. And there were two of us there, so we could now be in both locker rooms, one in the home and one in the visiting locker room. So I wasn't running back and forth from locker rooms at the time. So we could collect the audio and then jump in the car, and I'd have headphones and a laptop in the car, and I would be editing and producing the audio in the car.
Please tell
and
me you made Edgar drive the whole time.
So, but I would hotspot it and publish the stuff, but it saved me hours on the night. And then eventually it was really just those guys doing it. And now my son Bradley does most of that stuff now. Now that they're in the bubble, nobody's doing it. But, but so I worked up, I think there were five of us doing it by the end. So
I can see Stout just in there, like sniffing the jerseys after the game, like when somebody's doing an interview, sneaking into the locker.
It started to become an art with him because he had this microphone with the blue knob.
Yeah. So if you look at our credentials actually say we are BKG Production, which means Blue Knob Group.
The Blue Knob Group. That's great.
Wow. How about
so were
that?
You? So were you there when Edgar got popped by Greg Popovich?
I don't think I was there when Edgar got popped, but
he's so lucky.
I have been popped.
I got popped hard. So please break this down, because not everybody gets popped. I mean, there's 8 billion people in this world now.
Explain to the world what being popped means.
So Greg Popovich is a very famous NBA coach and one of the greatest coaches of all time. He is infamous for the way he responds to reporters' questions, especially if said question
is
a stupid question.
He is a douchebag.
I think he's
super
awesome.
Duper classy guy. He's very intelligent. He's a great coach. And the problem with sports reporting, and I'll be honest with you, let's be fair. You either won the game or you lost it. Yeah. You're going to ask the same five fucking questions, and they're going to give you the same five answers either way. Sports reporting is ludicrous because you don't really learn anything. Now, those guys are in there. They're making a shitload of money.
They're programmed.
They have no desire at all in the world to talk to us.
No.
But they are contractually obligated to. So they're going to come in. Yeah, we worked hard. We practiced hard and we had a good game and we could have done better, but
we executed.
You end up with Russ doing executed.
Yeah, we executed.
I was there for all those nights. Yeah. So everybody knows that. This is a sham. There's no real news coming out of an NBA locker room. Mm-hmm. So you're going to sit down there with Greg Popovich and you're going to ask him the same canned questions, and he's supposed to give you the same canned answers, and he doesn't like to do it. So he will give reporters a really hard time. Well, you have to picture the end of the game, that the teams rush back to the locker rooms, and then they sit in there and they'll shower up, clean up, and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting until it's time. Well, in the Chesapeake Arena, the visiting locker room is, I don't know, 50 meters from the home locker room. Yeah. So you run down the hallway, and the first person that we would ever interview would be the visiting coach, and you interview them in the hallway right outside of the locker room there. He comes out, they've usually got a little banner of the team logo behind there, and then there's going to be anywhere from 3 to 15 people, depending on how important he is and how important the game is. Well, it might take a half an hour for that first coach to come out after the game, and then that's when you really start working. Pop will screw with you, and he will sometimes come out 4 minutes after the game, 5 minutes after the game.
You never know.
Because you never know. He's got to make himself available, but he doesn't have to do it on your timetable.
Yeah.
So when I was first doing this, I was a little bit nervous and I didn't know when to be where.
Oh, yeah,
so
I were kind of rattled with all
run
that.
Run my ass down there as quick as I could and be out there, and I was going to be waiting. Now, what are you going to miss anything? I didn't have any chance. There was nobody else that was going to give me audio. So I was out there waiting, and I'm standing outside the visiting locker room door, and there's me and there's an Oklahoma City cop who's a security guard, and that's it in the hallway. And Pop walks out the door and he looks me in the eyes and he looks over my shoulder. And then he looks back at me and he looks over my other shoulder and he says, any of you reporters have any questions out here?
Oh, man. That's
and that was my first experience with Greg Popovich, because here I am. And I'm not going to lie. At this point, I didn't know anything more about basketball than I knew about football when I first started doing football. No. I just found my way into this.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
No.
So I think that night they had just, we had probably just rolled over them that night. Thunder were really, really good at that
time.
This
is when he coached in the Spurs, and, I'm guessing?
Yeah. So I think I gave him some canned, you know, tell us about the game tonight, Pop. What happened tonight? Just give me something general. And that one was fine. He was a little bit more forgiving. It was literally just me. There was no one really for him to put on a show with.
Yeah.
The next time that I had Pop, I came out. I was the first one there. And people will not ask Pop questions unless you just have to. Generally, there's a reporter that will fly around with the team. He's the local guy, and he's going to come around. They had one beat writer who was a print guy, so he didn't need any audio. And then there was me, and there was nobody else out there, and they had just killed us that night. They just rolled all over us. I think Kevin was hurt that night. So I asked Pop. I was like, you know, I'm looking around like, somebody save me. I do not want to be the guy in this when we get beat tonight. So I'm like, Pop, you guys just, you know, you really stuck it to us tonight. What was the magic tonight for you guys that you were able to dominate us like you did? And he looks at me like I am an absolute fucking retard. He says, what do you mean, what magic? There's no magic. There's no magic in basketball. Are you going to ask me a question? If you want to ask me a real question, ask me a real question. I was like, well, you know, coach, what was it that you guys did that gave you the advantage?
What was the recipe, coach?
I mean, like, tell me. And he's like, I'm not gonna explain the game of basketball to you. Do you have a question to me about the ball game tonight? Because I'm not gonna explain basketball to you while we're sitting here. You know, are you a reporter? Are you gonna ask me about basketball?
Dude, you got your ass popped.
And by then, so
is
what
this on YouTube,
then,
by the way? Can we find this clip somewhere?
I don't know.
Is it
if
in
this
some
one
compilation
is
of Pop popping people?
I don't
There's
know.
Just
I don't,
a
I don't
million
think there
things
is
going through my mind right now. Because
if I'm asking the question like that, there aren't enough reporters around with videos yet.
Yeah.
If I'm the guy that's asking the question.
Yeah.
Now, the first thing that happens, though, once somebody sees through a door or window that the coach is out there, all of a sudden everybody starts beelining. So now I've got my friends who are other reporters that are standing behind him pointing at me and laughing from the other side because I'm getting popped right now. But
that's
so
awful.
So and you know, we've already talked about this. I was in the Marines. I have had my ass chewed by the best in the world.
Yeah.
But I felt about this tall while Greg Popovich is making a fool out of me. Because and it was a perfectly legitimate question, and it was same canned bullshit question.
It was your verbiage.
That a reporter it didn't have anything to do with my verbiage. I don't care what I would have asked him that night. He was going
to
dress
me down.
He was
just ready to
because
eat
that's
someone's
where he was.
Lunch.
Oh,
yeah.
And if you watch Pop,
he was the lucky chef.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I think I would act the same exact way in his shoes too. Cause imagine how many, cause he wasn't always like that. Like earlier in his career.
He is. And if you'll look back at some of those, like some of the compilations with Sager.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he and Sager had a thing going for a while and he does it. Part of it is out of frustration and he's being a jerk.
Sure.
Part of it is out of love. I mean, there are those two different kinds of things. I mean, I watched one of them where his local beat guy, he's just tearing this guy up and you never know which Pop you're going to get. And at the end, he's like, man, I'm just screwing with you.
Yeah.
I just got to get ready for these other reporters for later on in the season. You know, I mean, it's
so
a game.
Did you get
it's
any of that from him?
Oh God, no. Oh God, no. I was just like, okay, yeah, whatever. I'm out. So.
Yeah.
So if there was, let's turn the tables here. If there was an opposite side, like who's the opposite of Greg Popovich that you've dealt with in the NBA as far as coaches?
Oh,
like, who's the easiest to work with and is the most acceptable? are respectful towards media.
Most of them are actually pretty reasonable. I mean, of the players, you've got kind of a wide range of players. There's the prima donnas out there that are going to be
the Westbrooks. Like
Westbrooks.
Yeah. I mean, can I just say that I've hated him ever since the beginning.
I had a really, really difficult time with
since
Russ
year
for
one.
Years,
since year ever, one, yeah. I've despised the guy. I could never bring myself to like him, even after Durant left, and he was all we had.
Would you quantify him as kind of like the Marshawn Lynch of basketball? Was he that bad?
He's worse.
I kind of get worse. It. So I get it, though. Bad. Think about it, though. He's from L.A. He comes out here to Oklahoma City, and he's just put in, you know, the middle of Trumpville. It's kind of tough. I can understand why he would be like that, but at the same time, you're the face of our franchise. Like, you should be appreciative of that.
It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
The way he treats reporters is unnecessary. Pop's still going to answer your question eventually. Yeah. Russ just wasn't going to play the game just because he was going to be an asshole.
Yeah, he was trying to be an asshole.
He was trying to be an asshole. And if you gave Russ bad press, I mean, look at the Barry Trammell situation.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that he treated Barry and stuff, I mean, that was wholly unnecessary. And Barry was never even that hard on him. You know, certainly no harder than he was on anybody else. And he was going to burn you.
It's like, how are you not going to get burned after you shoot 50 times? You know, you go one for 50 from the field and you're not allowed to say that you had a bad game. I mean, that's just, come on, man, you're being a millennial.
There is the distinction between the Greg Popovich versus the Westbrook.
Yes, because with Pop, once he would get into answering questions and stuff, he's still there's a whole lot of respect that you can give Pop. I mean, it's just, you can find it in there. I have a hard time respecting anything about Russell Westbrook except his athletic ability.
For sure.
You can't debate his athletic ability.
Can't deny.
He's second to none. But as a human being, I can't stand him. I think he's a piece of shit.
So how long did you do the basketball thing before you're like, all right, I'm going to step back?
I really stepped back, probably about 3 years ago. When I was in private practice, I could kind of dictate my schedule a little bit. Once I went to work for the state, then I'm kind of...
How long have you been with the state?
About 2.5 years, I think.
So when did the podcast thing for you kind of develop?
The podcast thing, I think we started doing that. That's been about 5 years ago. I think we really started doing it. We did it for a couple of years, but I quit doing that for the most part once I started working for the state as well. So one of those episodes of those shows, between the two of us that did that show, it was about 40 hours a week worth of work to produce one of those shows.
Okay. So I'm sorry to cut you off, but
no.
Take me back to kind of how did the podcast thing all, like, how was it born? Hey, that's a wrap on part one of our interview with Brian Henderson. So if you'll hang in with us next week, I'll release part two of our chat with him, where you're going to get a lot of details relating to the creation of the Breakers podcast and how he had derived this alias, Sam Culper, and how he toured the nation maintaining that alias. Pretty interesting talk. So that's coming out next week. Do grab a hold of it. It's the Jack Wagon Podcast.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye then.
The Jack Wagon Podcast is a Courtesy Clap production.